Welcome to Zero to Start Spotlight, a podcast about VR development that brings you inspiring conversations with immersive creators and industry leaders, brought to you by Oculus from Facebook. I'm your host, Siciliana Trevino. Stepping into the spotlight is Seda S.B. Proctor, a Brooklyn-based sound designer and new media artist. This interview was recorded on January 12th, 2021. Welcome to the podcast, SB. It's great to have you as a spotlight guest today.
Thank you so much, Siciliana.
We always like to start the podcast with finding out what your first aha moment with VR was.
My first aha moment was at a summer hackathon that NYU and ThoughtWorks was having. It was 2016. It was a hackathon that occurred over a couple of weekends. And so the group that I got paired with, we decided to create an Afrofuturistic carnival. I had been introduced to VR beforehand, but it was a driving demo and I didn't find it very interesting. So when the group decided that we were going to create this carnival, it was fascinating to me because that's a lot of where my work aligns. We created a short experience, and I had the ability to work with the motion capture lab. I had the ability to do narrative design for VR, and I also got the experience to do sound design, which is what my main profession is. And so in doing all of those things and also talking about culture, it for me, it was not only was it that here's a space that you can create immersive stories, and here is a space that you can make people feel like they are there, they are present, but also here is a space that I could tell the kind of stories that I would like to tell. Working in, you know, in theater, we're working in podcasts and audio dramas. I love genre fiction. I love sci-fi.
What's your favorite sci-fi?
Ghost in the Shell. I am a huge fan of Ghost in the Shell. I loved watching anime, sci-fi, gothic horror, magical realism, Afrofuturism. These are types of themes that, even cyberpunk, these are types of themes that fascinate me. And so this is the kind of work that I also want to create in addition to, you know, sharing real life stories. And so when I realized that here is a space where you have a void, essentially, and you can create out of that void and create these experiences and the different types of roles that you can play in creating out of that void, I decided, okay, this is something that I would like to spend more of my time and energy into. And then later, after that summer, I got to go to OC3 in California, and that was my first real introduction to the VR community at large.
And what was that like for you?
Very overwhelming. I had gotten a scholarship from Shift, via the Women in VR Facebook group, and I traveled by myself. I didn't really know too many people. So I met the other folks that had received the scholarship and got to go to the program that they had, and also just got to sit in on sessions and just listen about, you know, the different elements of VR. At that time, I don't think XR was a whole title. Yeah. So at that time, it was just, you know, VR and AR. So I got to listen to people talking about ways that you create. Being that it was my first conference, there's a lot of information that I didn't understand. But, you know, I would just soak it in and try to make sense of it, you know, looking at the notes or, you know, talking with other people about it to get a deeper understanding of what it meant to be a creator in VR. The ThoughtWorks and the NYU Tandon Hackathon, I continued to take part in the VR lab that they had. So I was able to learn how to use Unity and how to, at that time, build for the Gear VR. Nice. Such a long time ago. And I was also finishing grad school. Even though it wasn't a VR experience, I got to create a portion of my thesis project using Unity, looking at, you know, if we were in VR, this is what it would look like. But also I got to work on an original piece called With Without You, which I'll get into a little bit later. And so at that time, I was able to finish a very short proof of concept of the Bayou experience in there.
Tell us about the Bayou experience.
The Bayou experience is from a particular section of the story where after the mother and the daughter get separated, the mother is looking in the bayou to find her daughter. And so what I did was I created a boat and I built out the bayou in the water. And at that time, with my limited programming skills, I was able to get the boat to move in the water.
How exciting. What was that like for you?
It took months to get that one thing to happen, you know? And it was tough because I didn't have the equipment at home to be able to work on it profusely. So the only times that I got to work on VR was if I either went to the VR lab that I was part of, which was on the weekend for, you know, a good 3 hours, or there was another day in the week that had a weekly meetup. And so I would also sit and take 3 hours there. And so I was able to either on the weekend be able to build and put it on the phone and then wait until Wednesday to look at it in the phone again and make notes and ask questions on like what I should do to make it better. And then wait again for the weekend to sit and figure out how to make it work. And so getting it to move, it moved a little bit. It didn't move the way I wanted it to. You know, there is, you know, like moving in an X and Y, you know, but there's also that curve, which I was not able to code. But for a residency that summer, I ended up letting the boat be still and just allowing people to put on the headset and sit in the boat and look around. And I didn't think too much of it. I didn't think, you know, I thought like, oh, okay, someone would look at it and, you know, nod at it and say, that's a nice piece of work. And then they would continue. But what ended up happening at the gallery showing was, you know, people would put it on their head and they would look, and then people would just sit there and just meditate in the bayou, which I thought was very interesting. I'm like, you can't do anything. But people were just amazed about being able to sit in this boat in the bayou. And when they took the headset off, then they would go get their friend. And they'd be like, hey, I need you to come check this out. And then they would give their friend the headset. And then their friend would sit down and put the headset on and take a look in the bayou and then wait another like 5 or so minutes. And it would just continue like that. And most people at the gallery saw it because somebody else that they came with had encouraged them to take a look at it. And so I knew a few things from there, that even though it wasn't programmed for social experiences, the solitary nature of it could inspire people to want to share that experience with somebody else in a way of saying that you just have to see it for yourself in order for us to share this experience. Like, you and I can't be in the headset at the same time in the same place because we're not there yet. But I am so inspired by what I've just seen that I must give or encourage somebody else to be able to see this. And that was the social connection. And I remember hearing so many times around that time that, you know, VR was such an isolating and lonely experience. And I thought to myself, well, it could be lonely if I feel like I'm supposed to be there with 5 other people, you know, but if it feels like if it's just for me and only me, you know, like the way the boat was, only I could fit in the boat. You know, maybe someone could sit in front of me, but it's not a large boat. So I feel like I'm supposed to be in this boat by myself. The desire to have other people sitting in a boat with me was just not an option because it wasn't programmed that way. And so because it felt like it was just for me, I could enjoy it just for me and then be able to say, hey, you need to also experience this too. And so that philosophy of creating VR for an audience of one is something that I've really carried with me since then in terms of marking the difference between solitary VR experiences and social VR experiences.
What was it like to see that happen?
It was really amazing. It was also my first gallery showing too. So there was that as well. You know, like, wow, okay, someone is looking at my work and we're in a social setting and that's really cool. But also seeing that many people motivated by the piece and wanting to see it more. After a while, I didn't even get to talk about it as a proof of concept. It just, you know, I had mentioned eventually, like, this is a piece that I would like to develop into a full story. I had started out with the concept of a mother and a daughter getting separated in a bayou. And there's a, you know, having that part where the mother is looking for the daughter and then just deciding to build the environment around that and see what happens. And the responses were overwhelming in a good way. And the other thing that inspired me from that is I grew very attached to mobile VR experiences. I know there's the whole 3DOF versus 6DOF battle in the VR community. And then when you add 360 in there, that's a whole nother thing. And I know that we've now moved away from headsets like the Go to move towards things like the Quest. For me, what I, in terms of like the philosophy behind developing for VR is, coming from a performance background, I've always just been very much like, would love to not have any wires. If it doesn't have wires, then we're great. Then I'm more than happy to be able to develop for it. But the other part of that has always been that I want my work to be accessible. And I think about the audience that I have. And coming from a performance background, coming from people, you know, who do dance, who do music, who do theater, who do visual art, video art, you know, et cetera, thinking about like, what would they have in their home to be able to see things? And the answer, unfortunately, is they do not have a gaming computer. They're not going to buy a gaming computer. I'm not going to convince them to buy a gaming computer to view my experience. So I'm just going to let that go. And it's something that I still hold to today. What I do believe, though, is that if it is something that is that high end that requires a PC to power it, is that then it belongs in a public space where people can go and gather. And then it becomes more than just the VR experience in the headset. It becomes, what is the invitation? How do you come into that space? There's an experience around the experience. There's an exit of the experience. There's some kind of feedback loop that happens between the experience and people that come to be a part of it. I think it's different when you already work in tech and you have people who are already invested in that kind of ecosystem, or you work in gaming and, you know, that is the understanding of if these are the kinds of games that people are making and this is the kind of hardware that you need to support that kind of gaming. And so for other people, I can understand the desire to have those full out PC experiences because that's the kind of stuff that they engage in on a regular basis. So for me, on a philosophical level, that drives how I decide to move around in this space. Due to the pandemic, it's because of that philosophy that I've also started looking at augmented reality this year, because my audience has smartphones. It's the widest possible reach. And as long as it's something that people don't have to hack their way around, the onboarding can be a simpler process, then it's something that people would be wanting to engage in. And in that case, it would have to really be about the content and not as much about the technology. Obviously, the technology is there. It's novel. It's, you know, brilliant. There's tons of amazing things you can do. But the kind of experiences that would come out of it would really be focused on the experience itself and not as much on the shiny toy side of it. So these are things that that drive me in the kind of stories that I want to tell, but also the tools. And one of the things that I am a fan of is cyberpunk fiction. And one of the key concepts in cyberpunk is high-tech low-life, that, you know, the technology continues to develop, but society is not moving in that same direction. And what ends up happening is that people end up getting left behind. And so you have this disparity that grows in society as technology continues to grow, but then people are not given access to that technology and then what results from it. So that point and that understanding drives a lot of, in addition to like the kind of stories that I want to tell, but also being cognizant of the tools that I'm using to create them.
Tell us a little more about some of your early work after the Bayou Project.
In the summer of 2017, after I graduated from grad school, Brooklyn College, I got my MFA in Performance and Interactive Media Arts. I received my first commission via the Oculus VR for Good Creators Lab. I was one of 10 participants that were selected, and each of us were paired up with a nonprofit to create a documentary. So I was paired up with Malala Fund. We created a documentary called Girl Icon. We also partnered up with Milan Foundation, which is based in India. So the documentary is named after their Girl Icon Fellowship program. The general topic is about girls' education in India, and the subject of the film was Rani Kanauja, who at that time was 17 years old. We went to India for 2 weeks to film. It was my first large-scale project, and I faced many challenges from the logistics and travel to unexpected shifts in schedule. I had a great team together. I had an amazing producer, Sky Vaughn of Little Giant Wolf, and I had an amazing assistant, Natalie Au. I was both the director and cinematographer for Girl Icon. So not only was I focused on a narrative, but I was also focused on the mechanics of getting all of the shots together. So we established a filming workflow to be able to film in various spaces. Due to the amount of people that we encountered in public spaces, we wanted to make sure that we were able to get good footage, but also keep the camera safe and keep ourselves safe. And so what we did was we had three cameras that we used. We used the Insta 360 Pro. That was part of the program is that we received the camera to use for the project, rented. And we also received the Insta 360 for the mobile phone. And then on top of that, I also had a 180 camera that I used for particular shots. We would go to the particular location of that day. We would use the mobile VR camera to find a good angle, a good height, and a good shot. If we could see it in the mobile camera, then we could see it on a larger camera. And the reason why we did that is so we didn't set up the large camera and then shuffle it many times. We wanted to make sure that we were able to settle down, film, pick back up, move on to the next space without having to deal with adjustments and whatnot. Also, just considering that we were in public spaces, so, and with a camera that was very different than traditional cameras, so we wanted to be a bit quick about it. So we used the mobile phone to find the right angles and shots. And then once we picked the spot, we would set up the 360 camera there. The camera at that time, maybe this changed, maybe it didn't, but the camera had a fan that would be very loud for audio. And so due to me being a sound designer, I wanted to turn the fan off. And so if you turn the fan off, there is a limitation of 15 minutes for the camera being on before it shuts off, and whatever you have, you would lose it. We didn't want to lose any footage. We didn't want to damage the camera. And so what we would do is we would shoot 10 minutes at a time. You know, Natalie and I, as we were preparing for the film, we would run drills in my office. So we would, you know, pick a spot, use the mobile camera, say okay, then set up the larger camera, start to film, and after 10 minutes, have the timer go off, be able to turn it off, pack it back up, and then move on to the next location. And we would practice that many times to just be able to move as quickly and efficiently as possible.
Wow.
It was a very coordinated process, because also we didn't want to lose any footage, and you know, the last thing you want is to have the camera be damaged. And also it was like 90 degrees outside. You shouldn't have it on for that long anyway. So we would always film like 8 to 10 minutes at a time, and we would rotate cameras because we had two cameras, so that one camera could like rest and then the other one would be used, and then we would flip back. So we even had I like to nickname my equipment. So we had, you know, we had the nicknames for the cameras. So we ended up sticking with one 360 camera because it got very cumbersome to carry both of them around. But the 360 camera was CL, and then my 180 camera was Walla, similar to Wally, but you know, just Walla. And so that one was used because I would do montage images. And so we wanted to film them in 180 and then be able to edit them in post. So we had a very, ran a very tight ship in terms of shots, because we wanted to make sure that we had everything good. I was scared because I know that for 360 film and documentaries, oftentimes people will turn the camera on and they'll leave it there and they will find something interesting when they're watching it later. And just due to the nature of where we were and what we were doing, we're not able to do that. So we also, when we were making our schedule, was very strategic, and we are going to the school at this time to do this thing. When we know this activity is happening, we are capturing this moment. We're capturing that moment. Here's the time of the day where the family is home. Here's the time of the day that we are doing laundry, you know. So part of going around was also filming these moments, but also understanding what the routine and flow of life was for Ronnie in her Girl Icon community, in her home, at school, in her activities, to just get a sense of what that rhythm was like to be able to film. The other good thing about filming in 10-minute increments is it's very easy to remember at the end of the day exactly what you filmed, because they're not all that long. So when it came to post, we took a lot of time to compile the final documentary, but we were still able to remember, here are all the places and moments that we shot. So there was that too.
It almost seems like a 360 comic book style, in the sense that there wasn't a lot of movement.
Yeah.
Everything's happening around the camera.
Yeah. And I think that it's interesting that you say like comic book, because in my own video work outside of VR, it is very much like that, where we have these snippets and moments in time, and then there's other moments of abstraction. And so I think that also carried into how to film in VR. In terms of capturing these small moments here and there, it's similar to how I work outside of the medium.
Tell us about leading a project at Garage Stories in Barcelona.
Garage Stories is based in Spain, and they have a series of training workshops in VR. And so it's now international, and Martha Ortega, who is absolutely brilliant, she walks people through what does it mean to do immersive storytelling? What does it mean to bring somebody through an experience? And so I went to the workshop in Barcelona in 2018. When I found out about Garage Stories and that they were doing this 2-week-long workshop hackathon, I figured to myself I could extend my trip, because also January is the off season for me. So whether I want to or not, I'm usually on vacation. I could you know, take part in this workshop and just learn more about creating in VR. And then because I routinely would go there and work with actors, I could be able to work with them in a different capacity. I joke around with people and I say that if it wasn't for the workshop in Barcelona, I don't think Girl Icon would have been what it was. Because by the time December rolled around, and so just to build the timeline for you, so summer 2017 was when I received the commission for Girl Icon. November 2017 was when we went to India to film, and we did our first month of post-production, and I remember looking at the first cut and being like, this wasn't it. And it felt, you know, it was something that was cohesive and complete, but it didn't sound like me. It didn't feel like it was coming from me, and it felt very distant. And so I had to take time away to be able to go through the New York holiday season working in live entertainment. So had to take time to go away for that. And so I needed to have some creative time, but I was a bit discouraged because it was, you know, again, new medium for me, first large project. And, you know, it's like, okay, I have a cut, but it just doesn't feel, you know, this isn't it. So it's like, okay, well, let me take this time off to mull it over and to also just get those creative juices flowing. And so going to the workshop, you know, we learned about, you know, what it meant to bring somebody into an experience, the different levels of interaction within an experience, what that exit is like, and being able to work with, you know, a group of people on a short experience and be able to just to create something that didn't feel like a life or death moment. Like you have those projects that feel like it's either this or bust. And then you have those projects that you're playful with other people. And it just had a different context and a different vibe. And for me at that time, it was something that I needed. And it was just very phenomenal. We created El Testigo, or the Witness, which was also very strange for me because I don't normally work on comedies. It was a comedy about a misunderstanding of a man proposing to the woman that he's dating, but he loses the ring that he's going to propose to her with. And the person that is supposed to be helping him hide the ring was also in the room when they came back. And so the question became in VR, if it was truly a misunderstanding or if he was being honest. In a traditional film, you would see, okay, here's the comedy of, you know, the other lady friend that's trying to hide the ring, and the other woman A and woman B see each other, and, you know, there's like this misunderstanding, and, you know, ha ha ha, it was very, very funny. But because of the way we had it in VR, and the way that the room we filmed in was set up, based on where you were looking, you caught certain moments of the interaction, which caused you to question, like, exactly what is everyone's role in this whole situation, which is where the comedy came in. People would come into the experience and we explained that this is a new program for people to get married. And so to just make sure that it is an honest marriage, you are there to be a witness to the proposal. And so at the end of the proposal, you have to be the witness of like signing the paper of like, yes, I agree that they are going to get married, or be like, I don't agree at all that they're not going to get married. And how people put the story together was just very fun to see how that played into people's decision. It was just a fun environment to be in. And it's not to say that working on Girl Icon was not a fun experience at all, because it was. But the reason why I say that if it wasn't for El Testigo, there wouldn't have been a Girl Icon, is because at that time I was really, really questioning how are people putting together narratives in their mind, and what is the role of the audience in this experience. I needed to really understand why are they here watching this experience? Okay, you put on the headset because someone told you to, and so you're watching this experience, but like, why are you really here? And who are you in this? And how do you relate to any of this at all? And so the idea of the witness was something that actually carried over to Girl Icon, thinking about what it meant to be an audience of one and to have Ronnie be able to tell her story as she took you through her Girl Icon Fellowship program, her school, her family, her peer group community, her friends, her after school activities, and you being a witness to those things rather than taking on the perspective of Ronnie herself. Also, not even including the socioeconomic and racial implications behind that I did not want to perpetrate. But the idea of the witness was something that was a strong, strong point for who the audience was in Girl Icon. And being able to create something new, that gave me the inspiration, motivation, and determination that I needed to be able to go back to the cutting board for Girl Icon and say, okay, let's start this again.
Tell us about your latest work.
There are two projects that I'm focusing on this year. The first project is called A Pariah in Your Land, A Stranger in Your Body. It is a self-reflection of the aftermath of the attempted coup that occurred in Turkey in 2016. What that aftermath was for both the narrator as well as family and community around them. Due to the sensitivity around the project, the artists that are involved in this documentary, their identities are confidential. And so as the producer, I am working with them to bring this story to life. It is a surreal experience. And so we border a lot on what is dream and imaginary and what is the hard realities that people had to face after that. And to have your community torn apart, what does it mean when people become scattered? What does it mean to not feel welcome in a place that you called home? One of the main reasons why I decided to take on this project is because I identify as a first generation American. Both of my parents are from outside the US. My mom is from Liberia and my dad is from Guyana. And due to these type of events happening in their home, whether it is civil unrest or coup or war, they did not feel that they could stay in their own homes. And that is how they ended up in the US. And so that journey and what does it feel to not feel welcome in your own home, a place that you thought that you would live, you know, spend the rest of your days, that is something that is a common theme for me. What we would like to have people get out of this is to not only understand the historical significance of what that attempted coup was in Turkey in 2016, but also understand how that impacted the lives of real people. Oftentimes we talk about historical events as events and we forget that, you know, there are real everyday lives that are impacted and that are changed forever by those historical events. And so we want people to see the people and the faces behind what had occurred, to be able to hear that story, to hear that reflection, to hear the reflection of the narrator, and to see how their lives have changed and what they see now is something that is important and that people should be able to see and be part of. The other project that I'm working on is I'm working on the full realization of what has been nicknamed the Bayou Project, what is formerly called With Without You. I am a member of the Onyx Studio, which is part of the New Ink community, New Museum community. And so I am able to continue to work on this project. When I first developed it, it was in Unity and it was for the Gear VR. And here we are multiple headsets later and much, much further steps later. And so the full vision of the project is something that's actually achievable right now, which is amazing to me. There are a few segments of the project. There is a VR film and then there is an AR installation. The whole tale is a mother and a daughter who get separated in a bayou and find their way back to each other. And the mother is in the physical realm and the daughter ends up being in a spiritual realm. And there is the lady of the water who promises the mom that she will take care of the daughter and return the daughter to her when the time is right. And so the daughter ends up being with a group of children in the spiritual realm with this lady of the water, and the mother and the community that she is part of, they are searching for the missing children. The story is also based on actual Maroon communities in the U.S. So for people listening, a Maroon community, Maroonage, is when enslaved people would flee and set up makeshift communities in hard to reach places. So swamps, mountains, caves, to be able to live independently from the system that was slavery in the U.S., to be able to have their own communities and have their own autonomy. And so being that it is based in the bayou, that what came out of Maroon communities is a strong root of this story.
What applications are you using and exploring to build your AR experiences?
I am getting back into Unity and Unreal. I am working on my Unity certification. And for Unreal, I'm looking at it not only for AR experiences, but also the virtual production / real-time filmmaking pipeline. I'm interested in using it for live music because for me, and part of my work as a visual artist is I create visuals for live performance. And most of the time that's for musicians, as well as theater, but mostly for musicians. And so what is that world? What's that visual world around musicians like in a performance? For me, the virtual production pipeline enables me to create these virtual worlds that I'm excited about in VR, but then be able to have the final product be something that is a bit more accessible to an audience. There are still challenges of filming, obviously, and access to equipment and whatnot, but it is for me like a happy medium. I can still build out the wild immersive experiences that I would like to create. Someone on a stage can be able to see what those wild immersive experiences look like and be able to be in, you know, be part of that, but also for people to see what that finally looks like, they can look at that on their phone, on their computer, on their tablet, on their television, you know, to be able to see the final product. I'm still creating in VR and I have projects that are coming up, but in terms of like what I'm building out on my skill set, definitely augmented reality and virtual production. Because I also want to work with other artists who want to create these kind of experiences and may not have the technical expertise in being able to do that. I think live performance in its previous form of just being on a stage, I think that it's going to take time to get back to that in full. And so I've always been a proponent of digital performance, and I'm glad that it's finally getting the spotlight and eventually will get the respect that it deserves. And I think that this is the time to be able to lean into it and be able to create the kind of work that we want to create. And so if I have my own stories that I want to create, I can do that. But if other artists have their own experiences that they want to create, I can be a part of that as well with the technical and artistic expertise that I have to be able to bring those stories to life in new ways for audiences, because we're going to be in this for a while. And I think that even after this period of time is over, I think we'll still have virtual events. It'll open up a new type of audience, same way that social media has. But I think this is a time to really build and let loose. And so I encourage people to experiment, create experiences. Don't be too precious with VR and AR. I know that it's a lot of time and money and consideration. Don't be too precious with your experiences. Like, be, you know, create, iterate, put things together, show them, share them with people. And when you share them with people, don't be very apologetic about, okay, the tool is not like perfect or this or that and the third. If you really look at the experience that you want to bring to people, and for them to be a part of that, and how the tool helps facilitate that without it being about the technology and solely about the technology, then it becomes a little less stressful in terms of having people see what the future of storytelling looks like.
Well, it looks very bright with you working on these amazing projects. Thank you so much for sharing all your insights and journey. Thank you so much for joining us on the podcast today.
Thank you so much.
Follow SB on Instagram at SB Studios, and be sure to check out more resources in the show notes. Thanks for joining us today on the Zero to Start Spotlight, brought to you by Oculus from Facebook. You can support Zero to Start by subscribing on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and YouTube. Give us a rating and share this episode with people who want to learn more about breaking into VR. Until next time, happy installing.